Mr. Old Rail 9, we're talking about the Indonesian revolt in Java, Surabaya.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll just say what happened next, actually.
Right. You okay then?
Yeah.
Right. So we were called in at more or less a moment's notice to try and do something about this ambush by the Indonesians on the hostage convoy being brought back by, I believe, Gurkha and Indonesian troops. So we were out in midstream anyway, and they decided that there was a spotter plane up above, and that was going to give us coordination points to fire our 4.5s at. Well, as I said earlier, I was trained as a seaman, and one of the things was gunnery, which I never made use of. And I was on the upper deck, and the petty officer came up to me. He said, "Right, you're on number boy gun." I said, "But I'm not a gunner." He said, "You are." He said, "You're a radar gunner." He said, "Radar control." He said, "You get on that." He said, "We've got to fire into the town." So I was put on the trainer's seat, and we followed the coordinates from the director, which is above us, and we had to fire at the points that they put out, and we apparently hit the target. We hit the post office and removed the ambush, so the rest of the hostages then got through. But the Indians and the Gurkhas had a lot of hand fighting to do. All we managed to do was remove the real obstacle, and they still had to fight all their way through with the hostages to the dockyard. We didn't take, I don't think it was those hostages we took aboard. With time, I'm not sure. It's difficult to know. But I do know the next day or the day after, we had to take a lot of injured Indian Army personnel aboard. I can remember one or two being craned aboard on a stretcher with badly injured faces and arms and different things, which it was sad because it was probably some of those that we had only just taken in, which we were not very happy about. And that having been done, we took those out to another ship. I've looked at matters since, and it might have been the Bulolo, B-U-L-L-O-L-O, but I'm not sure about that. So, and the fight still went on for a few more days as far as we're concerned. We were still out in the stream because it was safer than being up against a wall. And our captain one day is on the bridge with his binoculars looking around at the hillside, and he thought he saw a gun being prepared to fire at us, a heavy gun. So immediately called our short range gunners up with the Orlikans and things, and we had our motorboats and things tied on the side at the time, so they had to dislodge those, let go of those and let them stay where they are. And we swung round, put up steam, swung round nearer to the coast and fired at these gun emplacements. Unfortunately, one of our Orlikans got the long range and he nearly missed a fishing boat with a couple of men in it, and they jumped into the water quickly. I think it was probably another couple of Indonesians that went off as quickly. So that was some of our people went aboard, I think, as parties with arms to help out, but there was not a lot that I heard about that. So from there we went back to Singapore, and then after that.
Now, what about the crossing the line ceremony? Do you recall that?
Yes, that of course was the first time I've ever done anything like that, and the ship stopped right on the equator, and a swim tank was put up on board. It's a canvas tank with water, filled with water, and some of the old stagers who knew all what to do, then they grabbed each of it. We, a lot of us tried to run, but a lot of others didn't bother. They just grabbed us and filled our mouth with what they call Mepocrine, they're little tablets that you have anti-malarial. I don't know whether it did us a lot of good, but covered us with soap and shaved us with a lump of wood and all this sort of thing, and chucked you in the water and a general bit of playing about, and you then received your crossing the line certificate for doing it. So it's very good, very interesting. It's something to remember more or less forevermore.
And what happened next then? You went back to Singapore.
Well, we went back to Singapore. There was another occasion where we, I had to be probably out with me timings from one place to another, but you bear with me on that. We went to Singapore. I think on the way back from the Surabaya-do.
That's been in early October, but I don't know whether we said that, but that's when it is according to these notes you've got.
I think so. After that, we went from Surabaya to, on the way back to Singapore, and we passed the Thousand Islands, that's in the Sunda Strait, where you can see the Krakatoa, the volcano that exploded many years ago. And one of the lookouts noticed smoke from an island. Most of those islands are supposed to be uninhabited. And when we went a little bit nearer to investigate and put a boat ashore, there was a sunken Japanese merchant ship. And there was about a handful of Japanese merchant seamen on it. And not on that, on the island. And so we picked those up and brought the engineer, I think, and the captain aboard to find out what they'd been up to. And took those back to Singapore with us. we tried to salvage what we could from the sunken ship, but it was just below the waterline. I don't think we could get anywhere on that. And then we went on to Singapore. On the way, I think we come across some invasion barges that were going from one place to another, but they were ours and nobody else's, so nobody bothered.
You do seem to have done some Sunda Strait patrol work, where you were stopping boats.
That's right.
What was that about?
Well, that was still to do with the Indonesian, because this Indonesian business went on long after that. It's been going for a number of years after that. The Sunda Straits patrols was that there was little native fishing boats mostly, and they were believed to be carrying arms to help the Indonesians. I don't really know how much good they would have been, because a lot of the arms that the Indonesians had were given them by the Japanese anyway, to help to provoke this uprising, according to the information I received. And we'd stop, it's a night and day, we'd stop any of these little fishing boats that we could see, we'd send a boarding party and search to see if there's any knives, cutlasses, or even guns or anything like that aboard. And take them if they had them, and send them on their way. I believe in many cases they didn't find very much at all. They find mostly women who had been carried from one place to another for some reason. And that wasn't our brief, really, to learn anything about that.
So what happened next then?
We went also to Padang, which is Sumatra. This business, by the way, did start with the killing of General Mallory. Now, General Mallory was in Surabaya at the time, and was trying to make a peace. He was on a white flag mission with President Sukarno, don't ask me how you spell it, of the Indonesians, to try and stop the war. that there was brewing up. So they met in Surabaya with this General Mallory, and while they were speaking, they were in a car, and the car was attacked by the Indonesians. Mallory was killed. Two officers with him made a run for it.
But you weren't there, so...
This is true. Yeah, right, that's fair enough. But anyway, that was the start of it. Now, at Padang then, we were sent there because there was an attack on somebody or other, in different stories as to who it was, by the Indonesians, and this person or persons were killed. So we were sent there to show the flag. And we, trying to show the flag, we were sent ashore just to go shopping and in the town. And that didn't really lead to anything. But we come away from there and back either to Singapore. But from Singapore, we went on to back to Ceylon. And while we was at Ceylon, the Indian Navy mutinied in Bombay. So we were sent up there, and we didn't know really what the problem would be. So we primed all the torpedoes, got all the guns ready, and expected some action. But when we got there, there wasn't any. The small Indian Navy, which was not very much, as soon as it saw us, just said, right, that's it, we give up. And there was no problem. So again, as was usually the case, we were given shore leave and just went ashore. But when I was ashore, it's nice, go through the gateway of India and going around the shops. But with my oppa, we walked along the street, we're not armed or anything, and there was an enormous great crowd of Indians coming towards us, all shouting and apparently looking for trouble. Of course, we got quite worried. We dived into a shop by the side of us, and the Indian in the shop there, they can always speak good English. He said, you don't have to worry about them. They're only fighting each other. He said, you just wait till the trouble's over. And we did. Went back to the ship. And that, more or less, is... the end of a lot of the activities. We just went around trying to keep the peace wherever we could.
And were you enjoying your time, or were you looking forward to being demobilised?
Well, I was enjoying the time there. It's when we got back to Britain that we got near to worrying about getting mobilised. We wanted to get back to this country, of course, so we were glad it was more or less finished up as far as we're concerned. And we were in a hurry to get back because all the officers wanted to get home, and we didn't stop many places for very long.
And what happened when you got... So you came back in, through April and May,
that's
from
it.
The looks of it.
Yeah.
And
we arrived at Chatham, right, which was our home base, and the other three ships went on to their bases, Portsmouth, Devonport, whatever has been the case. We went ashore, being told carefully by the customs that we mustn't take anything that we shouldn't, and then into barracks. I'm not sure how long after that we received leave, but we went from there, of course, on disembarkation leave, or whatever it was called, which was due to us for being out there for a year. The only leave we had had while we'd been out there was a leave up in the hills of Ceylon when we came back from the Java do. But then we were still having to wait in barracks for the mob.
How long were you in the barracks? This Chatham barracks?
Chatham barracks, yes. Only a matter of months, I'm not sure. But we each given different jobs. I was transferred to the other barracks. Not Chatham Barracks itself.
Doesn't really say. It says Pembroke too. But
yeah, somewhere. Anyway, I'd be at St Mary's Barracks. That's just up the road a bit. St Mary's Barracks, and I become barrack guard, being, I suppose, experienced and one of the few old ones left from the war.
What were guard duties like?
Now, barrack guard wasn't too bad. We consisted really more of ceremonial duties, I suppose. We had to parade in our webbing and gaiters and keep it all nice and clean, and at the times when you had to be on watch at the Commodore's house, you had to have a loaded rifle with a bayonet, and if you heard the slightest noise, you had to challenge the noise and find out it's only the wind blowing the trees or something. And there were cases where if you were on guard and was in trouble down the town, then they would call you out. Fortunately, I was never involved in anything like that. But it was, I suppose you'd call it a soft number, really. You just paraded around, and that was it. It was nice and easy. It was a true ending to everything.
And were you looking forward to demobilisation
then? I think everybody was really looking forward to demobilisation. You wanted to try to get back to your life. And after all your teenage years, really, had gone.
And what was demobilisation like? What actually happened?
Well, first of all, in my case, you gave in your uniform. A lot of them apparently didn't have to give in their uniform. It depended on who you saw. But you went to a place in the barracks. I went to a place in the barracks.
This was February 1947?
Yes.
You've been there quite a long time.
Yes, yeah, I spent a lot of time in there. Because you didn't get demobbed till your number come up. My number is number 56, and it was a little while. But all you did was spend your time in barracks, and being in Chatham, it wasn't too bad for me. I could get up weekend leave to where I lived at Kingsbury, you see, so it was not too bad.
So what was the procedure in your demobilisation? How did they actually do it?
Well, first of all, you went, in my case, to a place in Chatham Barracks. Other people went to other places for some reason, and you gave in my case, your naval uniform and all your naval bits, what they asked for. In other cases, I say it was different. But then you tried on whatever suits or clothes that were lying around in this warehouse place to see what suited you, and whatever you liked. I think it was one suit and a trilby hat and a raincoat and a pair of shoes and different things. And then after that, you could go. I think you got a travel warrant probably to get back home. And then that was it. But they also told you were liable to recall. Because I was a bit worried like others when the next war came along.
And, Korean War.
The Korean War, so I was a bit worried about that.
Now, you joined the Navy as a 17-year-old, now you've been put out, mm-hmm. You know, as a young man.
That's right.
What were you going to do? I mean, what job
this,
did you
do? This was the worry, I found, anyway. The job that I'd been doing before I went to the Navy was a dead-end job, really. And not only that, it used a lot of asbestos and stuff. Which I'm glad I didn't get involved in, because I think most of the people who worked there died in a short number of years from asbestosis. But I don't know that. And so I didn't want to go there anyway. I wanted to find a job. And I feel nobody wanted you. You were just one of the thousands of people that came back from the war. And not only that, you were a year later than most of the people come back from the year, so all the people in the front of the queue had gone. And quite understandably, yeah, some of those poor devils had been in 6 years or something like that, so they had every right. But also there seemed to be a lot of people with no homes that had come from the Europe, everywhere else, displaced persons. and they had to do something with those, so they had jobs. So anyway, I'd had a little bit of training on the educational course as a motor fitter, but it was an improver, so therefore you didn't know much. So when you went to go for a job, I tried three. I think the third one, the Labour Exchange said, well, this is your last chance. You don't get another one. You don't get anything in the way of dollar or anything either if you don't take this one. So, and that was a place, Hendon Laundry. And that was looking after their vans and cars. So I took that one. Unfortunately, the person in charge, an engineer, again, I don't like to mention names, he turned out to be what I would consider a nasty piece of work, because although I was an improver mechanic, I was expected to be a fully skilled mechanic, knowing everything for improver's money. So in the end, after asking for one or two rises, I didn't get. I said, that's it, I don't want the job anymore, in which case I was offered a rise, but I found myself another job. But I found it was rather disconcerting, the fact that many people, not just me, had come back from the war and you're not really wanted. I didn't expect to be to receive a hero's welcome, because I wasn't a hero. But I'd lost 3 years, some people have lost more than 3 years.
Now, just to finish up, the Royal Navy is still very important to you, and you've written this book, The Life of the Patriots book. Well, why, and you're a member of several associations, why is it so important to you still?
I still think that the people like myself love this country. I still think people like myself would fight for this country. But I still think it's wrong that this country doesn't really think of those people that did fight for them. And that to me is tragic. And I came through it without anything really bad. But something must have been bad, because I was walking in my sleep at times, even on board the Caron when we was out in the Far East. I walked across the plank from my ship to the one next to us asleep. And this must have been some effect with the war. And when I came home, I used to walk in my sleep. So it had some effect. Now, all this was forgotten by the people in charge of this country. But having said that, there are many people who lost their lives, people who were injured, people that I write the books about, which fared much worse than me.
Thank you very much.